We're going to talk about the promise of God that he's going to bless those that bless Israel. I want to talk further about that. And here in a minute, I want to show you some further background on the role the United States has played in the establishment of the nation of Israel and some things that few people understand. The United States and Israel have an incredibly, or have anyway, have had an incredibly close relationship. I don't think there's any other nation on earth we have had a closer relationship with than perhaps England, for obvious reasons. But when we were in Israel in 85, one of our guides, whose name was Eli, put it this way. He says, when the United States sneezes, Israel catches a cold. He said, that's how close we are. And they are very, very dependent on us, have been. And so few people understand the extent of the role that the United States played in the establishment and the continual survival of the modern state of Israel. Now, centuries before the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD by the Roman Emperor Titus, the dispersion of the Jews, which was predicted in the Old Testament, and we'll show you that here in a minute, the dispersion of the Jews all over the world had already begun. It had begun when the northern kingdom was taken into captivity about 720 BC by the Assyrians. And that was just a result of just terrible wickedness in the northern kingdom. Remember, the two kingdoms split after Solomon died. Solomon's son Rehoboam was the initial king and inherited the throne of his father. And remember, he had the young advisors and the old advisors. And the old advisors said, lighten the tax burden that your father placed, because Solomon was a builder. He was constantly building things. And if you read Ecclesiastes, one of the reasons he did this was to try and find meaning in his life. And I think it's Ecclesiastes chapter 2 where he basically describes himself as the Donald Trump of that era. He's building buildings and parks and all kinds of things, trying to leave a legacy behind and gain satisfaction over all the beautiful things he's building. And he goes on to say, vanity of vanities, all is vanity and vexation. Or this was empty, this was meaningless, this did nothing for me. But Solomon was a tremendous builder. And of course, when you have government building all these kinds of things, who pays for it? The people do, okay? Taxation. We know that. You know, when I was in Cairo, my wife and I were in Cairo in 85. My uncle, who was living at that time, was with us, my uncle and aunt. And he was very astute politically, and we went through downtown Cairo. All these huge skyscrapers and Sheraton Hotel and Hilton Hotel and everything else. And my uncle commented as we were driving through downtown Cairo to all the Americans on the bus, he turned around and said, ladies and gentlemen, that's your tax dollars at work right there. You know, and it was foreign aid. So, you know, when you have a lot of that sort of thing going on, you have heavy taxation. Well, the old advisors, when Solomon died, told Rehoboam, your father taxed the people very heavily. Lighten the load, lighten the burden, and they will gladly serve you. But the younger advisors came along, and they said, oh, you know, of course, they had big plans and big dreams of stuff they wanted to accomplish. They said, oh, we've got a lot to do. You know, you need to even make the taxation heavier. And, of course, what happened is there was a tax revolt, because he listened to the young advisors, and he increased the taxes on the people. And there was a tax revolt. The kingdom split. And so the northern 10 tribes split off, said, we're not going to submit to this guy. And Jeroboam became the king of the northern 10 tribes, and Rehoboam ruled the two southern tribes. Now, the interesting thing about the northern 10 tribes, and I need to memorize these numbers because they're important, but they had something like 18 kings. 18 to 20 kings after that. Every one of them was wicked. They did not have one righteous king. And so God warned them and warned them, sent prophets to them. And finally, in 720 BC, the Assyrians destroyed the northern kingdom. Now the Assyrians, the southern kingdom, on the other hand, they had something like 18 kings too, about the same number. But out of those 18 kings, they had five or six good ones. They'd have Josiah and Hezekiah, Uzziah, and a few of those guys. Asa was a good king. Joash was a good king. And so they had a few good kings sprinkled in there. And see, when the Assyrians destroyed the southern kingdom, In 720 BC, Hezekiah was reigning at that time, or the northern kingdom, I should say. Hezekiah was reigning at that time in the southern kingdom, and the Assyrians intended to take the southern kingdom too. And what happened is Hezekiah prayed. And the people prayed because the Assyrians laid siege to Jerusalem. They surrounded Jerusalem at that time. Hezekiah and the people prayed, and God miraculously delivered them. I don't remember which instance off the top of my head it was, because there were several instances of deliverance there. In one, God sent an angel and killed 185,000 soldiers, and I think that's what happened. The other, God made them think that there was a noise of a great army in the middle of the night, and they ran in the middle of the night. Whichever one it was at that time, I don't remember. But God miraculously delivered them. And so the southern kingdom remained intact until around about 605 BC. And then Nebuchadnezzar came in, and he took them into captive in three waves. Now, this all occurred about 600 years, maybe close to 700, 6 to 650 years prior to the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD. And in this Assyrian and Babylonian captivity, that's when the Jews began to be dispersed over the world. Because not all the Jews returned to the land in Nehemiah's day. You had Esther who stayed behind in Persia, Mordecai, and that story. And not all returned for one reason or another. But the dispersion of the Jews around the world began several hundred years before the destruction of Jerusalem. But Moses had warned of this, along with many of the other prophets. Moses warned all the way back when they were getting ready to go into the land, right before his death in Deuteronomy. Moses had warned them centuries before that a time was coming that due to their idolatry, they would be driven from the land. Deuteronomy 4:27, the Lord will scatter you among the peoples, and only a few of you will survive among the nations to which the Lord will drive you. So they had been warned that they would be scattered and driven out of the land if they did not stay true to God and if they lapsed into idolatry. Now, after being scattered by the Assyrians and the Babylonians, let me show you the extent to which they were scattered. The ancient historian and philosopher Strabo wrote this, and Josephus, who was a Jewish historian who lived right about the time of the apostles, Josephus quotes Strabo, and here's what Josephus writes in his Antiquities that Strabo, the philosopher, said. This people, Strabo said, referring to the Jews, have already made their way into every city, and it is not easy to find any place in the habitable world which has not received this nation and in which it has not made its power felt. Now, that's by the time of Jesus and the apostles. There had been that level of dispersion of the Jews around the world. So you have that beginning, but after the fall of Jerusalem to the Romans in 70 AD, Jesus has already ascended back to heaven. The apostles have had most of their ministry. I think, martyrdom of many of the apostles began. Of course, James was killed early on. But when you start talking about Paul and about Peter and the others, you're talking about the mid to late 50s and early to mid 60s AD that they began to be martyred, okay? And of course, John lived into about 100 AD, but all the rest were dead by then. But when you have the fall of Jerusalem to the Romans, the dispersion intensified. And the Jews were scattered like chaff to the four corners of the earth. Now, Moses also predicted suffering as the people were scattered. He predicted they would suffer, the suffering of the exiled Jewish people. Deuteronomy 28:65. Among those nations you will find no repose as you're scattered among these various nations. He says you're not going to find any rest. No resting place for the sole of your foot. There's not going to be any place that's yours. You're going to be like a vagabond. There the Lord will give you an anxious mind, eyes weary with longing, and a despairing heart. So as they're dispersed, he says, they're not really ever going to find true peace and a land that is theirs while they're dispersed. They're going to be driven around the earth, and they have been. Throughout the centuries, Jews have been exiled from country after country and kicked out and killed. It's been incredible how they've been hounded. just prior to World War II, just to give you an example of this, how severe that this prophecy and the fulfillment of it has become. In 1933, 9 million Jews lived in 21 European countries. By the end of World War II, 2 out of every 3 of those European Jews have been murdered. That's staggering. 2 out of every 3. The Holocaust resulted in the extermination of 1/3 of the worldwide Jewish population. And that's just one instance. That's not talking about the Crusades, where Jews were herded into synagogues and synagogues set on fire, and the killing that went on there. But these facts serve to illustrate that the modern, and here's what we've got to get, the modern rebirth of the state of Israel is against all odds. The modern rebirth of the state of Israel is a miracle. When you think of how the Jews have been exiled and murdered and hounded and chased throughout the centuries, there ought to be no conceivable way that this nation would exist these many thousands of years later. But let's think about it. What's a demonstration that the existence of the state of Israel is miraculous? Well, where are the ancient neighbors of Israel? You ever met a Moabite? Any of you have any Hittites, Amorites, or Amalekites living next door? You say, well, Arabs came from Ishmael. Okay. Does the travel agent sell any tours to the land of the Ammonites, the ancient Bible land of the Ammonites? Can you find the zip code of an Edomite? You see, not one of these ancient peoples exists today. They've disappeared from the face of the earth. Yet the Jews have a land, just as God promised. It's a miracle. It's a miracle. There's no other explanation for it than this is God's plan. And of course, what God plans always happens, right? Nothing can stop it. So we need to look at the, and by the way, the amillennialists need to think about this. The amillennialists who don't believe that God has a plan for Israel now, that Israel in the Old Testament was just a prophetic picture of the church in the New Testament, so we are the new Israel. We're the spiritual Israel. Now, there's a sense in which Paul says in Galatians that's true, that we are spiritual children of Abraham and spiritual children of the covenant through Jesus. And we've come into the blessings of the covenant, but not relating to the land. The land was a promise given to the physical descendants of Abraham, not to the spiritual ones. Okay? And so when we talk about the land, this is something that God again and again says, I'm giving this to you and your descendants, your seed. And so for them to possess a land is just absolutely incredible. And I'm kicking myself. I wish I would have included. I read this week a declaration by Benjamin Netanyahu. Benjamin Netanyahu, who is a past prime minister of Israel and probably is going to be the next one after Ehud Olmert steps down, probably in the next month or so. Netanyahu is probably going to be back as the prime minister of Israel. And a CNN reporter recently asked Netanyahu about why the Jews are able to have a land when it was the Palestinians' land. And Netanyahu said, it's not their land, it's our land. It belongs to us. And he gave a lengthy history that was so good. I'll have to try and remember to have that next week. It was really good, and it's on that computer somewhere, but I can't take the time to dig it out of my email. But it was really good, and the case he made as to why it's the Jews' land was powerful. Of course, the press didn't want to hear it. All right. Now, God, all along, they're dispersed all over the place. God, all along, has prophesied the return of Israel to the land. In Ezekiel 39:28, for example, God says, then they will know that I am the Lord their God, for though I sent them into exile among the nations, I will gather them to their own land, not leaving any behind. Now, that's not completely fulfilled yet. It's in the process of fulfillment. But This reemergence of Israel in her homeland has set the stage for the final fulfillment of biblical prophecies. The return of Israel to the land is significant in another way, in that it pinpoints where we are on history's timeline. It gives us a feel for what's happening on the prophetic timetable. An author by the name of Milton B. Lindberg wrote a book, The Jew in Modern Israel. Moody Press published it. And here's what he says, and I think it's a good statement. Without the existence of the nation of Israel, we would not be able to say with certainty that we are in the last days. That single event, more than any other, is the most prominent sign that we are living in the final moments before the coming of Jesus. The Hebrew people have been called God's timepiece of the ages. That's why I've titled this, Keep Your Eye on Israel, or more to the point, Keep Your Eye on Jerusalem. Now, here's what a lot of people don't realize. When we talk about the promise of God, I will bless them that bless you. Why has the United States, in spite of, you look at our sin. You look at over the past 20, 30, 40 years now. You look at how this nation has been moving more and more full throttle toward a total rejection of God. And it started in the 60s with throwing prayer out of the schools. And I'm not one that thinks putting prayer in the schools is the automatic key to revival. What concerned me about that is what it symbolized. It said, we don't want God anywhere near us. We want God as far away. It was the start of that. Okay, that's the meaning of it. Now, why has God continued to bless this nation? When you consider the millions and millions and millions of unborn babies, we make the Jewish Holocaust look like nothing. When you consider the Holocaust we have perpetrated in this nation on innocent babies. Millions and millions and millions and millions and millions killed, murdered through abortion. A Holocaust of unprecedented proportions. Why have we continued to enjoy the riches and all of the freedoms and all of the things we enjoy? Well, let me show you some behind the scenes things that people, I think most people don't know. Some of you may know this, you may have read up on this. But the recognition of the newly declared state of Israel by the United States was considered crucial to its survival and acceptance by the world as a legitimate nation. Remember, this is at the end of World War II. Israel became a state May 14th, 1948. Now, at the end of World War II, the United States' political influence was at its peak, and it stayed that way through the 50s. And then as the 60s unfolded, we started declining in our political influence. But at the end of World War II, the United States was the world power. The Russians were the pretenders to the throne. They wanted to get up there with us. That's why they started exploding hydrogen bombs and all that kind of stuff to try and militarily be our equal. But in terms of political power and persuasion, the United States had incredible clout in this world. Everybody watched the U.S. to see what we would do. And so our recognition, if we would not have recognized Israel, I'm telling you, the rest of the Western world wouldn't have recognized him. Everybody was watching what the U.S. would do. Now, this is also not widely known because President Harry Truman tended to swear like a stable boy, as we all know. And so most people don't think of Harry Truman as a Bible student. I don't know what his spiritual condition was when he died. I have no idea. But Harry Truman was a student of the Bible. And Harry Truman believed in Israel's historic biblical right to the land and often quoted Deuteronomy 1:8 in meetings, in government meetings, as proof. Deuteronomy 1:8, Moses said, "See," God said through Moses, "I have given you this land. Go in and take possession of the land, and that the Lord swore he would give to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and to their descendants after them." Truman believed that. So, what happened? Recognition of Israel, this is what most people don't know. Recognition of Israel was opposed by virtually every one of Truman's advisors. The notable exception being an advisor named Clark Clifford. Most notably, the opposition, it not only included the Secretary of Defense, who was a very powerful Secretary of Defense at that time, James Forrestal, But it included probably one of the most powerful Secretary of States in history, General George C. Marshall, author of the Marshall Plan, the end of World War II, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff during World War II, the top military commander. And by the way, President Truman considered General Marshall the greatest living American. That's the esteem that Truman held him in. He was Secretary of State in the Truman administration. It was a re-election year. In a meeting that we're going to refer to in just a moment, on May 12th, 2 days before Israel announced its statehood, in a meeting on May 12th, 1948, General Marshall, in the Oval Office, along with Forrestal, Clark Clifford, and other advisors, General Marshall in the Oval Office, sitting in a semicircle around President Truman's desk, looked at President Truman and said, "If you recognize Israel, I will not vote for you and I will oppose you in the re-election." Not meaning he would run, but meaning he would come out in opposition to Truman's re-election and publicly oppose him. Now, you got to understand, that was, you know, that was leading into a re-election year. That year, 1948, they were in a re-election year. And do you remember how close that was? Remember the erroneous headline? I don't remember which paper, if it was the New York Times or what paper it was, that came out the day after the election and said, "Dewey defeats Truman." That's how close it was. Okay? Truman was in a battle for his political life, and here the man he considers the greatest living American stands up in the Oval Office and says, "If you recognize Israel, I'll oppose you. I'll fight your re-election." Which shows how much power Marshall felt he had, because you don't sit in the Oval Office, even if you feel that way, you don't sit in the Oval Office and tell the President of the United States that to his face. You're on his turf, and you don't do that. You might think it, and you might quietly do it, but for Marshall to publicly tell Truman that, he was basically insulting Truman. Okay, so Marshall was feeling his oats. He felt like he had a lot of power. And that's what Truman was up against. And all the and Marshall, by the way, got all the advisors to follow him except Clark Clifford. Who did Truman listen to? Truman was shaken by Marshall's threat, which came in the Oval Office meeting of advisors May 12, 1948, just 2 days prior to the announcement in Tel Aviv by David Ben-Gurion of the reestablishment of the State of Israel. But at 6:11 p.m., on May 14th, 1948, just hours after Ben-Gurion's announcement in Tel Aviv, President Truman courageously, in the face of George Marshall and all of his advisors, except Clifford, he courageously issued the following statement, and here it is. "The U.S. government has been informed that a Jewish state has been proclaimed in Palestine. The United States recognizes the provisional government as de facto authority over the new state of Israel," end of quote. Recognition of Israel as a state. Recognition of Ben-Gurion's provisional government. When we came out, England followed, France followed, Germany, as it was at the end of World War II, followed, Western nations one by one by one by one by one and all around the world followed the lead of the United States and recognized Israel. How did the Israelis feel about this? The Jews recognized the importance of Truman's announcement and honored his courage. When the chief rabbi of Israel, a short time after, Isaac Halevi Herzog, called on President Truman at the White House, here's what he said, and I quote, "God put you in your mother's womb so that you would be the instrument to bring about the rebirth of Israel after 2,000 years. Chief rabbi of Israel at that time gave President Truman the credit for the new state of Israel come into existence. This, you know, Truman tried to say, "Oh, I think you're overstating it." But advisors and people standing near to Truman said tears were streaming down his cheeks. And later on it was said that that may have meant more to him than anything else that occurred during his presidency. That feeling on the part of the Jews about his role in reestablishment of the nation of Israel. See, that's how close the U.S. has been. To the point that those who were there at the time, those who were chief officials in Israel at the time, say that the reason we are a state is the recognition of the United States. That's what made it happen. "I will bless them that bless thee. Now you know why. We've known the blessings we have had as Americans because of God's promise to Abraham and our role in supporting the nation of Israel. There's absolutely no doubt about that. And so when we say, keep your eye on Israel, we need to remember, why is a fledgling little country with a land mass slightly larger than the state of New Jersey mentioned in the news more than any other nation except the United States? And it's because of God's covenant with Abraham, its founder. This covenant, the Abrahamic covenant in Genesis 12, greatly affects every one of us in this room, every one of us in our country. This covenant greatly affects every one of us. Nations who befriend Israel will be blessed, and those who do not will be cursed. And you can mark this down. God always keeps his word. We've been blessed because of the way we've stood by Israel. And I promise you this. We start pulling away. Look out. Look out. God will take his hand of grace off America so fast that we'll wonder what happened. Okay? Israel's the key to the whole thing. There's all kinds of prophetic signs, but Israel is the key to the whole thing.